You made it. You've arrived. This is Peter Levitan's Advertising Stories. And you're about to hear entertaining, personal, often instructive stories from deep inside the world of advertising.
Here's an interview with Michael Farmer. He is the author of Madison Avenue Manslaughter, an inside view of fee-cutting clients, profit-hungry owners, and declining ad agencies. Michael thinks that some CEOs of advertising agencies have so screwed up the business that the book should have been called Madison Avenue Massacre. So here's the deal. Michael has consulted with agencies like Ogilvy & Mather, J. Waller Thompson, Young & Rubicam, McCann, FCB, The Martin Agency, Saatchi & Saatchi, Team One, Leo Burnett, BBDO, DDB, TWA, yikes, and McKinney. I mean, the list goes on. Why? Because he knows what has been screwed up in the agency world. This is a very important interview. Hang in there. Listen to it. Listen every word. Play it twice. And hey, you know, while you're at it, why don't you subscribe to Advertising Stories? Oh, by the way, the book is so hot that none other than Sir Martin Sorrell wrote the foreword. He said, I should have listened to Michael a long time ago. This is your chance. Michael Farmer. That's an easy name to remember, right? That's a good brand name, Michael Farmer. What's your history?
Well, thanks, Peter. And I do appreciate having the opportunity to talk to you, even if we're having to do this remotely. My history, well, I went to university, studied English literature, Navy paid my way through college. So I had to serve 5 years in the U.S. Navy as an officer. I did that, went to business school, got an MBA, and started on a consulting career. In fact, I worked with the Boston Consulting Group for a number of years in the U.S. and Brazil, and then later with Bain & Company in the U.S., Germany, France, U.K., and Turkey. So I actually spent 25 years abroad working in a highly analytical way on strategic matters for chief executives. And then in 1990, I set off on my own with Farmer & Company. And as luck would have it, my second client was an advertising agency. In fact, it was Ogilvy UK the period 1990-1992, who had just been bought by WPP. And Mike Walsh, the CEO, said, you know, we got a problem. We're not delivering the profits like we used to. And I think we need a strategy consultant. And so I said, gee, I'd love to work with you. Mike, you'd be my second client as Farmer & Co. But listen, I have to confess, I don't know anything about the industry. But that's not unusual when you're doing strategy consulting, because for the most part, we go out and get the data and try to figure it out for ourselves. We look at pricing and other sorts of things. So if you're happy with my doing that, I'd love to help. And he said, great. So we started out together in 1992 on a voyage to understand why Ogilvy wasn't making any money. And that has led to essentially a 30-year career as a management consultant who has entirely focused on working with ad agencies and their clients. That includes creative agencies and media agencies and their clients. And it's been, over the years, about a 50-50 split. And I still do the same thing I did back then, which is I get the data, puts me at a certain advantage relative to agencies, because they don't look at their own data, certainly as businesses. So it helps me to understand what the kind of difficulties they're facing today.
Ogilvy was not making enough money in 90. So was that the transitional time? I know it was for me when I was at Saatchi and I had my first client say, I'm not paying you 15% anymore.
It was. Of course, this is the UK did not shift as quickly to fee-based remuneration as the US did. So in 1992, Ogilvy was just having certain clients shift. And it turned out that that was not their issue because under the commission arrangements of the 15% and the 17.5% markup and all that stuff, under those arrangements, agencies made a fortune. And Ogilvy was a public company, but they did not want the shareholders or their clients to know how profitable they could have been. So in a nutshell, Peter, if you want to think about what the agency profitability problem was, from that period until 2005, they had way too many people because what they did was they staffed up to the maximum to where they would show a 15% profit margin when they could have shown a 50 or 60% profit margin. They need, and then they got to thinking, well, we have to be capable of putting 3, 4, 5, or 6 creative teams on any brief to crack it. That's the way we do business. And what I was able to help them to do during that first 15-year period was to realize that they could do the amount of work that they had with a lot fewer resources and that they didn't need to put multiple creative teams on everything. But it did require someone to actually measure and document how much work they were doing. And they weren't doing it then. And in 2020, they're still not doing it today. So a lot of what I have to do to help agencies fix themselves is to help them figure out how much work they're actually doing for each client.
All right. I have to stop you. I think the word might be perplexed. In 2020, large agencies, so we'll move the smaller ones to the side for a second, although this impacts everybody. The larger agencies are just waking up to the fact that they need to understand their financials better, understand their staffing, their cost structure, their P&L, their balance sheet. Today, they're still need to figure this out.
Yes. The only true metric in an agency is profit margin. That's profit margin by client, which they have a hard time doing. And then profit margin for an office or for a global client. And in order to do that, they have to use timesheet data to figure out what their costs are. And everyone knows that the timesheet data is at least 30 to 40% out, incomplete. And they do not measure, they do not document their scopes of work. When I did Ogilvy in 1992, they had 50 creatives and they were doing about 360 deliverables, 360 ads. It was all original work, TV, radio, and print. Even then, it took us 7 weeks to figure out how much work they were doing for each client. Today, I just did a similar office of 50 creatives. They are doing 15,000 deliverables for clients because of email marketing, social posting, Instagram, Facebook, you name it. And 90% of the work is adaptation work as opposed to origination work. The workload has exploded in volume and diminished in individual importance. Each little thing that they do is pretty small and doesn't have a big impact on the brand. They still don't know how much of it is. And believe me, I've worked with, you know, Ogilvy, Gray, VMLY&R, JWT, Wonderman, Saatchi, TBWA, BBDO, you name it. I've worked with them all. I don't know of a single holding company agency that has yet developed a methodology for measuring the amount of work they do so that they can better negotiate fees and resources with their clients.
Okay.
you know, you and I have talked about this before, so it's not like this is a great surprise. Plus, let me plug your book for a second, Madison Avenue Manslaughter, which is a wonderful title. Just makes me feel like I just want to restart my advertising career. And it's not just the title, it's the subtitle, which is an inside view of fee-cutting clients, profit-hungry owners, and declining ad agencies. And the part that I find ironic is that you have a foreword by Sir Martin Sorrell, which we can come to a bit later, you know, who's now repositioned himself probably for the third or fourth time as the genius. We won't get into that right now.
There is one thing I'd like to get into with Martin, because he wrote in the foreword, because he knew about that work back in 92. He was very pleased that by getting rid of some surplus resources, Ogilvy got its margin from 5% to 15% in 1 year. He was happy about that. It was a tough time for him. But he wrote in the foreword, in 2019, I probably should have paid more attention to Farmer. Not using it more extensively was probably a mistake. In other words, he gave me the stiff arm for 30 years on my methodology for keeping track of scope of work. Right. And he wasn't the only one. At least he confessed it.
No, I inherited a little bit of his DNA because I worked at Saatchi. So I understand. I understand the deal. So now I'm going to ask you two questions. I have this sort of ADD problem. I'm going to start with one, and I just want a short answer. And then we're going to talk about the broader issue, which you just brought up a couple of minutes ago. A company like Bain or any of the large consulting companies, which I know you've discussed in the past, are companies that some of the business has shifted to. So certainly some of the strategic side of the advertising industry has shifted to, if not too much of it has shifted. Those are companies that are people-based as well. I mean, they have some products and some IP, but essentially it's people, you know, as they say about advertising agencies, our assets walk in the door in the morning and they walk out in the afternoon. How do they manage the fee structure, the management of time? How do they do it?
Very interesting. First of all, they do keep timesheets, but they don't mean anything. For example, when I was at Bain, the typical consultant worked on two clients, period. So you were 50-50 on client A and client B. And you had a billing rate. And so 100% of your time added up to the revenue that you should represent. And that's how we budgeted our resources. It was a very important top-down exercise at Bain every month that every person in the firm was allocated to clients and that we had enough fee for each client to support the size team that was needed. And we knew, let's say, if you were doing a study for Monsanto or someone like that, and you had a certain budget. In those days, it might have been as little as $50,000 a month. And then you had a team whose billing rates added up to $50,000 a month. That's how it worked. That's not how it works in the agency world. And I would add that today, probably the average billing rate for a junior person at Bain is $500 an hour, whereas it's probably $150 an hour at a typical agency. So they've always been able to get different billing rates. That isn't what distinguishes them, though. What distinguishes the Bain, McKinsey, BCG, and others, I'll give you a little anecdote. Bill Bain said, and this is back in the 80s, we will not take on a client for any work unless we've had you, Farmer, as a director, have had a three-hour private meeting with the CEO to talk about hopes and fears and priorities so that we could always align our work with what needed to be done to improve performance, because that's all CEOs worry about. They worry about share price. They worry about growth. So that was that was what we did. And it was not easy to execute, but we believed that getting the relationship right from day one was the secret to doing the right kind of work, delivering the right kind of results, and being paid the right kind of money. So I don't see any of that going on in the agency world. They just want to win the business at any price and without having a lot of input into what scope of work they're going to work on or how good the scope of work is. It's just, yeah, give us the work. We'll do it for this amount of money and thank you. And that is the terrible failing I think that agencies have found themselves in is they accept the conditions that their clients impose on them and they're happy to get them as opposed to having a point of view about what the client needs and a belief in their capability to overperform for them.
Is this so somehow maybe the business was always there and when it was 15% and the profit margins were high, didn't matter. Maybe I'll say that. I mean, I don't 100%
could have been, believe. Could have been really high, Peter. Could have been, really
could have been
high,
high, could
managed.
Have been better. Yes. No, I know. Yeah. I mean, I used to run businesses. A couple were global and yes, we had five creative teams. I even had businesses where I had multiple creative teams in multiple countries. It was fun. You know, I got to, you know, go to Czechoslovakia and drink whatever that clear shit is that they drink. And that was great. And it was fun, you know, so there was, you know, I get it. But
and the creative work was very good because when you throw resources at a relatively simple scope of work, TV, radio, print, and maybe a little direct marketing, et cetera, and you've got excess creative teams, you can do incredible work. Incredible. When you've got 15,000 deliverables, that's 100 ahead. That's another story.
And clearly that, you know, the fragmentation issue is an issue. But I want to know why agencies became somewhat have a commodity mindset. Let's do better than that. How can an agency get away from having that commodity mindset? Or is it impossible given client demands where they don't see a differentiation between agencies?
I think the problem is that all agencies behave the same way with their clients, whether they're media agencies or creative agencies. They behave the same way. They're hungry for the work. They need the revenue. They're trying to satisfy, and we're talking about the big boys here. They're trying to satisfy their holding company budget targets for the year. That's the thing they're most worried about. That's where their bonuses come from. So they need the revenue. And so they all behave the same way. They all kind of pitch the same way. And they will kind of accept the fees that the client is prepared to pay with neither side knowing how much work is involved. So now let's talk about a little bit why clients behave the way they do. I'm doing some analysis right now of the Fortune, the top 100 advertisers in the U.S. from 2009 to the present. So that's right after 2008 financial crisis. Do you know, as far as I've gotten in analyzing this, the average growth rate of revenue over the 10 years is 1.5% per year. In other words, clients are not growing. We had the financial crisis. We have had social and digital revolutions. We've had e-commerce. We've had a demographic shift from baby boomers to millennials. And this incredible expansion in media types. And the growth has come out of brands. In other words, nobody's figured out how to grow them again. And no one really knows whether there is untapped growth potential or this is just the way it is. We live in a saturated society and, you know, big branded companies don't grow anymore. Nobody knows what the answer is, but it does mean, since everyone is obsessed with share price, that procurement has to make up the difference through cost reduction. And the M&A people have to make up for it by buying companies. And the financial engineering people have to use debt and dividends and other things in a special way to grow share prices. So sales are growing at 1.5% per year. And stock prices or market share prices are growing at 10.5% per year. Amazing. More energy is going into boosting share prices than into figuring out how to market. And that means procurement is turned loose, and they're cutting media spend, they're cutting agency fees, and they're extending payment terms and doing everything they can to improve the financial performance of their companies. And agencies are taking it in the ear as a result. Now, if you're going to be in that business, you're going to be a commodity because you're just a cost. If you want to be different, then you got to be like Bain, McKinsey, or BCG and say, we're in the business of helping you grow again. And that's what nobody is doing.
Are there Harvard Business case studies on those consulting companies that ad agency CEOs should be reading?
Oh, they don't have to go that far. All they have to do is go to Bain.com and look at the number of published papers that Bain has on practically every industry they've been in. And that will include how to manage information and the rest. There's a whole, all of these folks have got practices in retailing and marketing and branding. And only recently have some of these companies started to buy their own agencies so that they can continue the work downstream. Listen, just go look, compare the website of an agency which has no content on it but pretty pictures and some ads we've done, and then go to the consulting firms, and it's all about ideas and findings and strategies and action plans and expertise. You just cannot believe the difference. Yeah. Okay. It's, you know, that's why that is a huge opportunity, because if an agency says, we are in the business and we're in relationships to help our clients grow, and we mobilize our expertise in knowing what media mix and spend levels to use and how to organize creative resources, you know, that there would be no competition for that. You wouldn't be competing with the consulting firms because they don't really have the same expertise in media and creativity. You wouldn't be competing with any other agency because they're just saying, give me the work and I'll do it at whatever you're prepared to pay. It's totally wide open.
Is there a talent gap? Excuse me. Is the type of person who could be doing that in the agency world now, unfortunately, in the consulting business?
Probably. I mean, look, Bain, McKinsey, PCG hire people right out of university at $65,000 to $75,000 a year. They pay them a $15,000 a year signing bonus and guarantee a $20,000 end of year first year bonus. You know, so it's up in the six figures. An agency is hiring someone at 30 to 40, and then working them to death and leaving him with the impression that there is no strategy. It's just, you know, get your feet wet and kill yourself working. The incoming consultant will be trained for 3 weeks in how it work, how we do business at Bain with our clients, what analytical tools we use, what case studies. They're all thrown together for a 3 week off campus thing. And they all do that. So they make a huge investment in MBA and non-MBA graduates to get them on board so they can be productive from day one. And we know that there's almost no training. I don't even think agencies have a point of view about what they're doing other than we do media planning and buying across all platforms, or we're creative. I just don't think it goes beyond that. I don't think they have understanding or a belief that they should be in the business of helping their clients perform better.
I counsel my agency clients to pay attention to, it sounds so obvious, to return on investment, to talk to clients as a business partner which is how I was trained. I was trained at Dancer Fitzgerald, Sample, Saatchi, those worlds. And we actually had training programs, which was nice. I even actually, this is, you think about it, and this is clearly what happened in the shift from agencies to consulting firms. I would sit in board meetings at clients and they would turn to me and say, how does that sound?
Right? Yeah.
Now, Peter, you're representing the customer here. How does that sound? And I'd say, well, you know, I don't think people on airplanes really want to smell tuna fish sandwiches. I mean, it was sometimes very silly, but sometimes a little bit deeper than that. All right. I want to round into something, if we can be positive for a second. Let's say you and I woke up one day. We found out we were brothers. We didn't know we had this mother. And we also didn't know that she had built this advertising agency in, let's pick a place. We might want to live Denver. And she said, boys, I'm handing you this agency. What would you do if you owned an agency and you were given it, you got it by accident, you had to run it for a while just to help mom out?
It'd be kind of fun. I think I would do two things. Number one, I would reposition our mission along the lines. I would say we are in business to help our clients perform better using our capabilities. And that's how we're going to sell ourselves. And if someone wants to hire us just to be a low-cost provider of media services or a low-cost provider of creative services, we turn it down. We don't do that kind of work. We only want to be in relationships where we are in a partnership and we share a goal to improve our growth and profitability, the client's growth and profitability. So that's number one. That's mission. The second thing I would do is I would tell every office, we're global, aren't we, Peter? Mom left us a global agency.
Yes, we have passports. Well, wait a minute. Let me say.
It doesn't matter.
We have Maltese passports, which means we could actually travel somewhere. Okay.
So I would tell every office head and every client head from this day forward, we are going to document and measure our workloads, our scopes of work, in a uniform way across the agency. I don't care if the client is using Decideware or using something else. I don't care what the client uses to document scopes of work for their purposes. We'll do that, but we're going to have an agency way of measuring our workloads. And then we are going to negotiate fees on the basis of how much work they're giving us. And we're going to require, as part of the relationship, that there be defined scopes of work that define our budgets and our resource needs. That's how I would start. And the thing is, when you know workload, Peter, and you know fees, you know the price that you're being paid for your work. And there isn't an agency in the world that has an idea of what price they're charging or being paid for the work they do because they don't know how much work they're doing. This is the only industry in the world that doesn't have a price. Price is not price per hour. Price is price per TV equivalent, or price in my lexicon, price per scope metric unit, which is a price per TV equivalent. I measure scopes of work and then convert them into a uniform unit of work so that I can measure price. The other thing we can measure is productivity. How many of these things is the average creative expected to generate a year, produce? And there's a right answer for that too. So without workload, you don't have, you need three metrics to measure an operation. You need to know price, you need to know productivity, and you need to know profit margin. Today, agencies only know profit margin. And, you know, there's an easy way to make a margin. Just downsize to where you have so few resources that for the pitiful fees you're being paid, you're making a margin. And that's what they do. Like, many agencies would say, hey, we don't need to look at Unilever because we make a great profit margin on it. And I'd say, yeah, to do how much work? Do you have enough resources? I know what the fee is and I know what the resources are, but how much work are you doing for that? And then you measure the work and you calculate the actual price. And oh my God, I'm not talking about Unilever, but I'm talking about many other clients. In fact, probably the range of prices that a single agency office is being paid can range from $300,000 per TV equivalent to $50,000, a six to one difference. Because what varies is how much work they're doing for the fee they're being paid. It's really, it's unbelievable, to be perfectly honest, that the businesses are so badly measured and managed. Because, man, if you've got price and you've got productivity and you've got profitability, you know which clients are sick and which ones are not. And if you got a really sick client, you go talk to the client, say, look, we're doing way too much work for the fee we're being paid. And we don't even think the work is the right work. We could come up with a scope of work that has less work in it for us, same fee for you, and has a better chance of driving growth. But I don't know anybody that does that, other than some people that I've worked with. Because it isn't the natural way of doing things. The natural way of doing things is thinking, we're a service company, we do what the client wants, we keep the client happy, that's how we keep the client. Well, how well is that working? Clients fire their agencies every 3 years. And there's a huge opportunity, Peter. And there's also an argument for huge pessimism if agency CEOs don't start doing a proper job running their businesses, as opposed to just getting new clients to replace the ones they've lost.
Well, let's end on what I'm going to frame it as an optimistic question, but it's icing on the cake of the pandemic. Is the pandemic, do you think that this pandemic is getting agencies to actually start to focus on what's important and to possibly revise their business model?
I wish I could say yes. The experience is no, because the first thing that happened in March was that the holding companies said, oh my God, the spend's down, the campaigns are down, the fees are down, you've got to downsize. And every one of them, Omnicom, WPP, Publicis, Dentsu, the rest, went into massive downsizing mode. So they all really cut. And I think they've dug a big hole for themselves. If it had been me at the beginning of the pandemic, knowing everything that we know, you know, about how long this is going to go on, I would have taken a massive write-off. If I were WPP or Omnicom, I would have said, you know something, I'm setting aside a reserve of $1 billion that I can use to change the mix of people that I've got. And I would have gone and I would have gotten rid of a lot of junior people. And I would have started to beef up my capability, provided that that was associated with a change in mission. Instead, I think the holding company said, well, we're in the same business and we've got junior people doing too much work. We're just going to slash even further. And because we have to protect our share price. And so I think they put their agencies they dug a hole for them, which is going to be interesting. If things come around, they're not building on a real strong senior talent base. So I think COVID has made it harder. Will make it harder when things turn around.
And here's my last question. Is this going to drive more, quote, in-house agency work, unquote?
Yeah, I'm afraid, I'm afraid that clients look at it this way. I'm paying Peter. Peter makes $100,000 a year, and Peter's billed at $220,000 because we're not only paying for Peter's salary, we're paying for the overhead, right? And a profit margin. You know something? I can get an internal Peter for $80,000. So they see the difference is $220,000 for Peter at his mom's agency versus Peter working internally for $80,000. And they think that's a no-brainer. And then they continue Then they hire an ex-agency guy to run the internal agency who says, we can do anything. We can do TV ads. We can do everything. Just let me hire up. And so they take the work in-house. They hire people, even if they're in Omaha, Nebraska, or, you know, somewhere like that. And then in a few years, when the corporation's in trouble, they say, what do we have 100 people in an internal agency for? Why don't we just go outside and negotiate better fees? And then they downsize. But in the short term, when there are cost pressures, the client's going to go to internal agencies. And that's because the agency is doing commodity work. Now, I don't think they're going to internal consulting firms to get rid of McKinsey, thinking, hey, we can hire MBAs too, because they're thinking, you know, McKinsey has got some expertise. Or they've delivered a lot of shareholder value. I'm not going to mess with that. But you tend to mess with people or service organizations if you think they're just delivering a commodity service. So the real agency problem is, how do you get out of being viewed as a commodity service? Well, you got to reposition yourself, and you got to stop work. Because creativity, nobody's paying for it.
Right.
Everybody says they're creative. So that means if everybody's creative, then creativity is a commodity. And instead, we deliver value. We deliver value is not a commodity service. It's hard
yep.
to do.
Well,
creative expertise, you know?
And hard to own creativity. I've written about positionings and different kinds of positionings. Of course, you know, the we are creative, just keep it simple, a tiny percentage of agencies were ever able to get away with that.
Yeah.
You know, a Jay Chiat somehow managed to figure that out. There are very, very few. And of course, creativity is subjective,
of course.
Which is hard to base a business on subjectivity. Okay.
Well, and you have 100,000 people at work at WPP, and WPP is talking about bringing creativity to solutions. And we all have 100,000 people and they're all creative? I mean, it boggles the mind. There might be a handful of creative people. So anyway, clients are not paying for so-called creativity. They're not paying a premium for agencies that win awards. It's time to grow up about that issue. And as sad as it is, the only thing that can be demonstrated is clients pay for improved results. Doesn't mean they pay a bonus to people that do it. It means they pay them better fees and better billing rates and better prices for their work. Like, you know, the Bains that get $500 to $1,000 an hour for their people as opposed to 220 or opposed to 150.
Well, so, I'll say, all right, I'm gonna fold this into a compliment in a second. It is unfortunate that many agencies are not paid for solving what I think today is an incredibly difficult problem, and that is, how do I reach the consumer I want to reach? How do I reach that client, customer, person? And what I mean is, the fragmentation is so great that I don't know anybody who understands, should I be doing Google advertising? Should I be doing Facebook advertising? Should I be running television commercials, which still work for some brands? Should I be, you know, I've named three or four.
Yeah.
TikTok is coming. You know, it's endless. And the companies that can actually address that issue of fragmentation and somehow figure it out from a consulting perspective are the ones that will most likely make it. So I'm going to fold this into what I'll call a positive. People should buy your book, Madison Avenue Manslaughter, and they should key on the word manslaughter and be the ones that aren't slaughtered.
Yeah, I would have called it Madison Avenue Massacre if at the time when I wrote the book, I had thought that the death of the agency was anything other than an accident. At the time, I used manslaughter because I thought it's the accidental death through neglect by the agency. But the longer I work in it, the more I think that the denial. Peter, I think you are so right about one thing. Whoever figures out what media mix will deliver value and create sales is going to be very, very successful. And I will say one other thing. As pessimistic as I am about agency management, I say hats off to them because they have dealt with a shift in fee structure. They've dealt with globalization. They've dealt with the digital and social fragmentation that's come on them. They've dealt with the introduction of procurement and benchmarking. And they have solved, they have been confronted with so many problems that they have solved. It's just sad that they've missed the big one, which is how to get control of pricing again. That's really, I mean, when you boil it down, how you get control of pricing for your services is probably the single largest unsolved problem that they have. And if they set their minds to solving that the same way they set their minds to becoming proficient in doing media planning and buying and creative campaigns across, you know, 27 different platforms, if they could do that, how to figure out the pricing thing, then they would be successful again. And that's the place where they're in denial, because they don't seem to be interested in trying to figure that out.
Well, on that note, I'll let you know that the check is in the mail.
Okay.
And I look forward to seeing you in Mexico again.
Peter, I'd love to see you in Mexico again. I would have come, I would be planning to come in February this year, but who knows where we're going to be in February.
You won't be in Mexico, but we'll be back.
Yeah. Okay, Peter.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Great talking to you.
Ciao.
Bye.
Okay. Yeah. That was Michael Farmer on how to get your agency act together, get your agency's act together. He talks a lot about big agencies. Believe me, it works for the small ones. I had a huge agency. I had a small agency. It's all about making profit. It's all about being smart. It's about working with the client as if you were a business friend, consultant, not just some dude that takes orders. And there was a little tricky, smarty thing in there, I will say, and that is if your agency can figure out how to do a media mix with 10, 15, 20, 25 different media choices these days, go for it. All right, that's the drill. I want to thank my friend Don Waz for producing this for me, because he's the man and he's from Detroit. And, you know, we like Detroit, right?